Everyone has a story worth telling. On man on the mic, the lessons are compelling. We uncover the journey, the highs and lows. It's your story that matters. It's how we grow.
What's up, everyone? Hey, welcome back to another episode of Man on the Mic. I'm super excited. I'm going to have a conversation with my man, Parker Anderton, today. Before we dive in, I'm going to turn it over to him and let him introduce himself.
Yeah, so I'm Parker Anderton. You can find me on Instagram at underscore Swandy, S-W-A-N-D-Y. It's just a nickname from high school. But yeah, I'm 30 years old, married, have a beautiful three-year-old daughter, big outdoor enthusiast, dirt biking, skiing, snowboarding, you know, anything outside. And then currently my profession, I'm a senior regional at Grit Marketing. So okay. We do door-to-door pest control sales, and that's been my profession, I mean, since fresh out of high school. Been doing door-to-door sales. I did 8 full summers, and then I've been training now on like a more macro level for the last 2 years. And so that's what I love, right? I love working with people and training them. And I felt like sales or door-to-door sales gave me this big gift of an accelerated pathway to my dream life. And so I've felt very strongly drawn to like giving that same gift back to other people.
That's amazing. I'm curious, what got you into the door-to-door industry?
Poor. I was super poor, right? It's funny. I my first year of college, it was actually my second year of college. I was donating plasma twice a week, dead at Grifols in Provo, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. I was working full time between 2 different jobs and going to school. And it just was kind of a rough, you know, there was no time to do anything fun. Yeah. Right. And I had a random roommate named Josh Powers, who at the time drove a Saab 9.5, which was like so cool. Uh-huh. It was paid off. And he just had a very carefree lifestyle. Seems like money didn't, you know, stress him out at all. And so I was basically the lay down recruit. I walked in and said, where do I sign? And then went out that summer and had a phenomenal experience. So,
okay. Is Grit Marketing, was that your first company ever?
No. So started a company called Altera Pest Control.
Okay.
They sold and rebranded as Aptive, but at the time,
okay.
So I went on, I did that my first summer with Altera, went on, served a 2-year mission in Kansas City, Missouri. When I got back, I ended up selling for a company called Vantage for a couple years.
Okay.
Had a great experience there. Switched with a bunch of my buddies to a company called GreenX. And then after kind of a run there, we all broke away and started the Grit together. So
okay.
A lot of the guys, the senior leaders at the Grit, I've been with them ever since year one.
Okay.
So
that's awesome. It's funny. My group of friends we play basketball with, there's like 12 dudes who do sales, and it's all different companies. And I swear, every time a new kid shows up, it's like a new name of a company. But Grit, Vivint, Aptive, you have the big name ones. I'm curious for you, what are the biggest takeaways that you've gotten from door to door?
Yeah. Biggest takeaway for me, I think, is the power of like the human mind, right? I think that most people would think that in sales, there's these traits or qualities that make it so that you would succeed.
Yeah.
But over the years I've seen it's mental resilience is probably the main like indicator for success, right? Okay. That and hard work. And so, you know, I've seen all walks of life do really, really well at this job.
Yeah.
And I think in society right now, money is almost, it can be seen somewhat scarce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. A huge takeaway for me is it's taught me that money is in abundance, right? And it's so cool to see these young guys or young girls that what can happen when they start to realize that they can control their own paychecks.
Yeah. No, I love that. How do you deal with, because I have some friends who've worked with really good companies and other ones who've worked with companies who've been kind of screwed out of money or whatever. How do you deal with that negative, I guess, connotation with the door-to-door industry?
Yeah, I think so door-to-door gets a bad rap, and rightfully so in a lot of ways. I think there are a ton of horror stories and a lot of things that happen that create those narratives. But what I will say is not all companies are created equal. So
yeah.
I always tell people, like, no matter what your experience has been or if you've heard things, like, come hear us out. Give us a shot to earn your business, right? And we have structured a lot of things at the Grit. I mean, so many of us that started the Grit, we all came from different companies and had different – we experienced some of those bad things. And a couple of the main things that we started the Grit under – that's a terrible way to say that – one of the real reasons we decided to start the Grit was to take all these bad parts of the industry and try to get rid of those.
Yeah.
And we're not perfect, right? But we try to really avoid having those kind of horror stories with our company.
Yeah.
So.
No, that makes sense. It's funny. There was a kid, last summer, right before last summer, a little 19-year-old kid, nice kid, was going to sell with the grit, and he was trying to recruit me and my buddies. Now, we're all 30, careers, everything, and this kid is, like, giving us numbers and spitballing and everything. And my one buddy was like, well, you don't have your own car, first of all, and we don't want to see what your boss is making. We want to see what you make. And I've always thought, I'm like, just learn to read the room. Because the way that you go and pitch someone or try to recruit someone, if you can read the room and have the right message or the right person, I feel like you can get anyone to go and to do and to at least test it. They may not love it, but they're going to go try it for a summer. What would you say in terms of the game of recruiting? What advice would you give?
I think recruiters do a lot of talking and not a lot of listening.
Yeah.
And as we, and you know, me and my business partner, Skyler, I feel like as we've learned to listen, recruiting becomes a lot easier,
yeah.
Right? People will tell you what they want. They'll tell you what they're looking for. And if you're not afraid to tell the people that what they're looking for, if you don't have it, you will attract and draw the people that you're going to work really well together with. So the other thing about recruiting is it's interesting. Like even the reason I'm sitting here, you know, I'm 30 years old. I'm not, you know, I'm married. I have a kid. I'm not out meeting a ton of people.
Yeah.
But my job is to be a leader to my people. And I don't want them to think that when you get to be 30 years old, like you just get to ride off their coattails and ride off their success. And so about a year ago, I realized like, if I'm not out meeting new people, but I still need to recruit at the highest level, I got to find a way to do it. And so that's when I really dove, you know, headfirst into social media.
Yeah.
And it's been incredible. It's been a really tough experience. I think it's a lot more work than anyone could ever really imagine. Uh-huh. But it's been a really life-changing experience for me. It's allowed me to recruit at a higher level. It's allowed me to make connections. And so I think recruiting, like anything, is just you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, a goal of mine over the next couple of years is to be one of the best recruiters in all of Utah.
I love that. How do you, because I've had some buddies who've dealt with this, how do you find that balance? You have a kid, you have a wife. So when you go out for the summer, does your wife go with you? Does she stay here?
Yeah, for I think 5 summers, my wife came with me.
Okay.
We had 1 summer while she was pregnant with my daughter where we decided to be apart that summer.
Yeah.
Just for like doctor's visits and things like that, it made it a little more simple. But I think the biggest thing, and it's really not that complicated, is my wife and I are pretty clear on like the dream and the vision. And it doesn't make sense to make all these sacrifices if you don't have a reason that you're doing that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm not saying that it's been perfect, but I think we've always known kind of what we want and why we're doing it. And that's for sure made it a lot easier. And so for people that are married, especially that are having kids, my recommendation is to, you know, be super open with your significant other and get really clear on the vision, the dream of what you're going after. And then put yourself in a position where, you know, the sacrifice is worth the reward at the end.
Yeah.
So.
I love that. I'm curious now, what is your vision? What's your dream?
You know, I had a really interesting, I'm working on restructuring that and okay. I'll tell you why. So my whole life, I had these couple of like core things that I really wanted, right? I grew up in a broken family, so divorce, right? I didn't have any full siblings, lots of steps and halves. And I don't feel like any of us had the same interests or hobbies, any of my siblings. But the one thing we all loved was boating, yeah. Right? Had an aunt who would invite us a ton boating, had another uncle who would invite us. And I remember as a little kid, Lake Powell was like this place that to me was like heaven. Because all my siblings, we all had fun. We all wanted to be there. And so from as young as I could remember, I always wanted to own a boat. I always wanted to have a houseboat, wanted to be able to do those two things a lot, right? And so this coming up to 30, I have one of my dream boats. You know, we got a houseboat. And I thought the first time I walked on my houseboat, I thought it was like going to be this amazing, life-changing experience. Yeah. And I remember walking on and being like, oh, it's cool. But the magic was that I got to bring all these people that I loved on this boat, right? And so my dream for so long, I feel like I hit that at a lot younger of an age than I thought, right? And so over the last year, that's what I've been really kind of recreating is what is the dream. And I think the dream now is to impact as many people as I can. I want to give back this gift that I've received of being able to chase dreams. And then I want to be, you know, when I think about death a lot, which is weird, but not in a dark way.
I'm right there with you.
It's like when I die, I don't want to be known as like the guy that had the boat. I don't want to be known as the guy that did door-to-door sales. I want to be known as a world-class, you know, father. Yeah. That's probably the most important title to me. I want to be known as a world-class husband, as a world-class friend. And so I think, and I know this is a long answer to your question, but I think at first the dream for me was material. As I achieve those material things, I realize that that's not what made me happy or made me fulfilled. And now the dream is much more of like, who am I becoming and who am I helping the people around me become? That fulfills me. And then the last kind of piece of the dream is, you know, I believe another title that's super important to me is a child of God and a disciple. And I think in the world, there's a lot less of that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, it's becoming less and less cool to talk about like spirituality, uh-huh. right? And I want to, you know, go against the grain, and I want to be someone who draws people to Christ and who draws people to spirituality. So those are, but again, I'm still kind of working on the dream, but
that's beautiful. I agree with you. I think so many times we're scared to talk about our faith or what we believe to be true. And to me, I'm like, why not just be yourself? There's no sense in trying to be something society wants you to be or how social media wants you to be. Just be yourself. And the beautiful thing about that is those who are connected to you will connect, and those who are not will go away, and that's fine. Not everyone needs to love you. I think for me, that's been the biggest thing I've learned the past years. Not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to want to be around you. And that's okay. You don't need everybody. We don't have time to be with every single person of the day, every day. I want to ask you, being in the industry that you are, being around so many different people, the mentors that you've worked with and everything, what's the best advice that you've ever received?
Oh, I'm gonna have to think about that for a second.
Okay.
I think the best advice I've ever, well, kind of interesting. This will take a different, so it was actually for my mission president.
Okay.
His name was President Randy Vest. Came from a lot of money. He was the CAO of Kimberly-Clark International.
Okay.
So big net worth. He had served a lot in the church, been like a stake president, bishop twice, you know, all this different stuff. And I knew my mission president as this really spiritual guy who I was pretty scared of, but I loved, right? Yeah. And at the end of an LDS mission, typically you have this exit interview. And so I'm sitting down with this person who I respect and love and who's changed my life in more ways than you can ever imagine. And one of the things that he said to me really stuck to me. And he said, Elder Anderton, he's like, the Lord wants you to be very wealthy. And I was like, oh, sick. You know, I'm thinking. And he goes, and not for probably the reasons that you think. And he said, now I'm not telling you not to have the car and not to have some fun along the way, but he said, the Lord can do a lot more with a person that is financially set up than someone that's not. And he said, for example, a lot of people would be amazing mission presidents, but didn't make good financial decisions that allowed them to be in that position.
Yeah.
And so the final statement that's always stuck with me is he said, your goal, Elder Anderton, for the rest of your life is to never limit the Lord. And what he meant by that is, make financial decisions, become, you know, educate yourself, do all the things so that if there was anything that the Lord needed you to do, he would never be limited in calling you that because you had already made those decisions. And right. I think that shaped a lot of, you know, my life. I'm a human, right? I like the worldly material things, but at the same time, like there's always been this sense of the dream that's like, I want to never limit the Lord, right? And I see people like Casey Baugh, right? Money in the world can be painted as this extremely negative thing, but money isn't good or bad. It just is what it is. But what money is a magnifier. And so if you're a really good person, money's going to magnify that. If you're a really bad person, it's going to magnify that as well.
Amen.
And again, I look at people like Casey Baugh who have a lot of money and they do so much good with it. I can't be in a room with Casey Baugh and not cry hearing about the stories and the ways he's able to bless lives. And that's like something that's really, really important to me. Is to be able to bless people with that wealth.
I think that's huge. I like what you said. Don't limit the Lord.
It's an interesting thing that, you know, my mission president just articulated it so well. It's like, he wasn't saying the Lord is or isn't going to call you these things, but he's saying you should be the person that if there's anything that he needs, he is not going to be able to be limited in calling you for any, and it's not just money, it's in anything.
And I'm sure that what he said to you has probably grown, because when he said that to you, what, 19, 20?
I was 22.
22. Now that you're 30, it's probably over the years you're like, oh, this is what he meant, and just little things have clicked along the way.
100%. Yeah, it's and who knows? I only see the good, right? I don't know how many times I've limited the Lord. I'm imperfect, but I will say I have, that advice has changed the way I look at everything, and I feel like I really want to be a tool in the hand of God. And as that's been a desire, it's been really amazing to feel like that's happened, right? And I feel like the Lord parts the veil at times and shows you, hey, like I'm using you as a tool. I'm putting you in this situation so you can do this. And, you know, the thing that's cool is I don't think that is like a Mormon thing or a Catholic thing. It's like, if you believe in God, go out and become the best version of yourself so that God can use you as a tool. And I think that you will live an immensely more rich and happy and fulfilled life.
I love that. I agree with you 100%. You know, one of the things that you said at the beginning of this podcast, that it's something that I've had to do the past few years, and I think a lot of people, it's a key to becoming successful, is you went out and you hired a mentor. So many times in life, and especially I think with the new generation, they want everything for free. They don't want to invest in themselves. They don't realize you need to have skin in the game. What was that journey that took you to finally buckle down and invest into yourself and hire a mentor?
So it went kind of the year before that. I realized that as I made money, I was always investing money in something, real estate, a fund, venture capital, you know, what have you. And it might've been even Jimmy Rex that gave me this advice, but he said, we're so quick. I think it was him. He said, we're so quick to invest in all these other things that we have no control over. What if we invested yearly a portion of our income into ourselves, and how much more would that make us, right? And so I was sitting down with my bank account, and I ended up creating a bunch of different accounts, a bunch of different savings accounts, and separating my money out for the year. I had like all my mortgage all in one account. I had my car all in one account. And then I made two accounts. I made one that was investing in my health, and one that was investing in myself. And all I did was take like, I think it was 1-3% of my total income that year and just put it into an account. And that money sat there for a while because I wasn't used to using money for that. Yeah. And I remember kind of coming towards the end of the year, it was like, hey, like I put this money aside for a reason. I should invest in myself. And then just worked out. Ryan Bacher came to Lake Powell, and I had this like impression. We fly up on this helicopter. I'm in tears because Lake Powell is my favorite place. Never seen it from above. And I'm just sobbing, feeling the spirit, just, and it's amazing. And I had this thought, like, you should ask this guy to be your mentor. And at the time I'm like, I don't even know if he mentors. I'm not gonna be that weird kid that he just met. And it's like, hey, will you mentor me? And that thought stuck with me for like 3 months. And then finally one day I just texted him and I was like, hey dude, this is super weird. I don't know if you even do mentoring, if that's something you're about, but I've had this feeling. And, you know, long story short, it's been a very life-changing year. And I think that I've learned that forever, I want to take a percent, you know, whatever that may be of my income, and put that into an account and force myself to invest in me. And I think because of that, right, I'm a better husband, I'm a better father, I'm a better employer, like all of it is better. And so the advice that I'd have for anyone listening to this is like, don't be afraid to invest in yourself, right? The easiest way I've found is take some money, do it as a percentage, put it into an account, and it will remind you often like, hey, it's okay to go get a mentor or get a life coach or get a health coach, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I agree, because I think what they do also is they challenge you to get out of your comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
And they force you to do things or look at things that you wouldn't on your own. My coaching group that I'm in, I mean, I never did like breath work or meditation before, and that's a big thing that we do now, and I've made it part of my routine. I hate, absolutely hate cold plunges.
They're the worst.
But that's a big thing that we've, you know, that we've done, we adapted. And so it's a complete mind shift when you have someone who forces you to get uncomfortable. And so for me, I say the life I live right now is I've learned to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that's where growth occurs. I'm curious, and I, because you mentor probably a lot of kids that are going to knock for your company and everything. What have you taken away that you train your reps? Or what do you give to them?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, like if you're going to work with me, I can tell you what I'm going to give you is belief, right? I have spent a lot of years understanding that belief and confidence is the number one thing that helps people sell. It's not the technical, and you won't find me teaching a lot of guys the technical stuff. I'm totally capable of doing that.
Yeah.
But I've found that what moves the needle the most and what's the most impactful to people is when you can teach someone how to believe in themselves, how to increase and gain confidence, how to really control their mind, because I've spent so much time around so many top guys in this industry, and I've realized that that's the stuff that matters. It's their mentality, it's their confidence, it's their belief. And then the other thing that I've felt a calling to as a leader is, like, I understand that you're not always going to believe in yourself, and that's okay. Lean on my belief in you. And so I think that's one of the most important things that my leaders have given to me in this industry, is belief in myself and then believing in me when I didn't believe in myself. And so I try to train that and focus on that. And that's just a really big part of what I do.
Okay. So if you don't mind, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick.
Sure.
So if I'm a young college kid, just got off my mission, and I've heard all these different door-to-door companies, what is it that separates you guys or would get me to choose you?
Yeah. Couple of different things. Number one, is I think one of our goals is, we don't want you to come and build our dream. We want to figure out what your dream is, and we want to use the grit as a vehicle or a pathway to get that, right? I think one of the things is, if you think about sports, right, there's so many high-level athletes, and everyone says they want to work with the best.
Yeah.
And we have so many top performers and so many people that you can learn from. And so the reason I would say, you know, you just got home from your mission, why come work with us? Well, number one, we're going to be able to train you how to sell at an extremely high level,
okay,
no matter who you are, no matter what walk of life you're from. Number two, we have a culture of transparency and honesty. And in this industry, that's really important and unique,
yeah,
right? And then I think, like, the third thing that I would say is, we're not the one true pest control company. Right? Like, yeah. I want to make that very clear. Like, I don't believe there is just one, like, I've had great experiences at a lot of different companies. But what I will say is, we have a very, very unique culture. And if that aligns with what you're looking for, then the only way you can know that is by coming, meeting with us, hearing what we have going on. And the other thing I'd say is, not everyone wants to be in this industry for forever.
Yeah.
Right? I started out being a 1 or 2 year guy that it just kept working out. But we have a pathway for people. If you want to only sell for 1 year, get a bag and get out, like, we'll help you maximize that. If you want to be here for 2 to 5 years just while you're in college, we will help you maximize that at the highest level. But for people that are looking like myself that want to make this a career, like, I'm 100% confident we're going to be a $1 billion company.
Yeah.
And we have the right teams and the right groups to do that. And we're just looking for people that want to be a part of something special. You look at Casey Baugh, Todd Peterson, Jeff Mendez. So many people say, well, dude, I would have loved to be at Vivint at the beginning. Well, I believe that we're going to live that same story.
Yeah.
And we're only in year four. And so if you want to be a part of a Vivint type story, come work with us. Because we're not just, you know, a company that wants to sell and make a lot of money and move on. Like, we want to have a lot of impact.
I like that. I'm curious, because I went to Jeff Mendez at his event last year. And I've been to a lot of these guys' event. When are we going to see you on stage hosting an event?
I don't know. I'd love to do something like that. My passion is, like, teaching, right? People at The Grit know me as the guy who loves to train and teach. And it's funny. I have a vision board. I'm a big believer in those because of Jimmy Rex.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's been on my vision board for a long time is Grant Cardone. And it's not because I necessarily want to, like, talk or act like Grant Cardone, but I would love to be someone who impacts. Like, I've never met Grant Cardone, probably won't ever meet him, but he's impacted my life in a massive way through his speeches and his training. So I don't know when, but it's on my vision board to have, you know, something like that come to fruition.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw you a bone. I don't know if anything will come with it, but I will connect you with his assistant.
Cool.
And wherever that conversation goes, it goes. But I will do that introduction. And maybe that gives you a chance to either connect with him or something. But his assistant is awesome.
Well, I appreciate that.
And replies, communicates a bunch. Because my biggest thing that I've learned in my career and everything is, why do I connect and network with people if I'm not going to share it? And be able to open doors for other people and start other conversations and sit back and just watch people work their magic.
Well, I appreciate that a ton.
So I'll get that done. I want to pivot this conversation a little bit and step away from the door to door and your career there. And I want people to get to know the Parker away from door to door. You're a big outdoors enthusiast.
Yeah.
What is it about the outdoors that draws you there?
I don't know. I think, so it's funny because in sales, it's such a team thing and I love that.
Yeah.
Right. But growing up, I was always had a lot of anxiety about being on team sports because I never wanted to be the guy that was like the reason that held the team back. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. And so I found a passion at a really young age for things like skateboarding and dirt biking and snowboarding and skiing because like I was the only person that held me back.
Uh-huh.
Right. So that was kind of where it started. And I love the action sports community. Right. Like I went to the pro wakeboard tour here this last summer and like, they're just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're just the coolest athletes. But I think I just love being like, I don't love being inside and I love being outside in God's earth. I love dirt biking because I feel like I get to see things that no one else is or very few people are ever going to see.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I think I feel like last night I skateboarded for the first time in like 3 or 4 months and it makes me feel alive. I don't know what it is about it, but you know, everyone has those things that recharge them.
Yeah.
And being outdoors recharges me in a huge way. And it's all those like different activities that I do, I love. And boating specifically, you know, this is no shot on golf. I know that people love golf. I'm terrible at it, so I probably don't like it.
I'm not a golf fan.
But the thing I love about boating is I don't have to pick between my hobby and spending time with my family. I get to do them together. And so, you know, my wife and I bought this boat and we have spent so much time as a family on it and created these core memories. And that's the other thing I like about all those things is dirt biking is okay by yourself, but I wouldn't do it. Like I get to do it with amazing people.
Yeah.
So
I'm curious, I know you love Lake Powell, but where's your dream place to go boating?
Lake Powell. I'm telling you, like,
that's the best place in the world.
Yep. I genuinely can't think of a place where I have more memories that's been more spiritual for me, that I see more happiness. Like, you know, for anyone that hasn't been to Lake Powell, like, you should go, but you don't really have cell service. And there's just this magic. People talk to each other, people get to know each other, people experience life
and disconnect and be present.
It's amazing. So, I'm biased. I think it's been a dream of mine since I was a little kid to like Lake Powell is just so amazing. And there's a lot of cool lakes, but Lake Powell is just always a very special place to be.
I've never been to Lake Powell. One of the things I'm excited, our coaching group, one of our events will be at Lake Powell. I've been to Flaming Gorge.
Cool.
And done a family reunion there, but Lake Powell, all my friends have been, and everyone is like Lake Powell, Lake Powell, Lake Powell. And I'm like, eventually I'll get there. But just the pictures and videos, it looks beautiful.
It is, and it's, like I said, it's you don't have to like boating to love Lake Powell. It's just this amazing, it's beautiful, it's fun, you can disconnect. It's, dude, I think it's the best place in the whole world.
I love that. I'm curious, if you can't choose Lake Powell, if you, your wife, and your daughter could go anywhere in the world for a weekend, where would you go?
Oh, dude. I think right now, so this is funny because I used to be the most anti-Disney person in the whole world. Like I would tell my wife, you go to Disneyland with your friends and I'll pay for someone to take my spot, right? We went this last year and it is magical. It's not that I like personally love it. It's just being there with my daughter and seeing the way that it really is just this magical place. So I've become a Disney dad. I've become the thing that I feared the most.
I think that's fair that you have a daughter because I've gone with some buddies and finally told them, I said, a bunch of grown men at Disney by ourselves is not the move.
No, that's not it.
Whatsoever. I'm on the Peter Pan ride, and I look like a creep because I'm like, why is this giant guy on Peter Pan? But I'm like, you know, if I took a girlfriend, if I took kids or my niece or nephews, I would love Disney all the time.
And I'm going to take back that answer. The more I thought about the North Shore of Oahu is our favorite place. As much as I love Disneyland, like I actually think we all love the North Shore better. La'ie and that whole, like, I would like to live there one day. I mean, it's just this vibe. It's this small town vibe, surfing, skateboarding. And what I love is it seems to me on the North Shore of Oahu that there's not a lot of competition for money. Like, what people do is they don't flex money. They flex the time they spend with each other, right? Yeah. It's like, again, they're surfing. You go to a skate park and it's like all the moms are bringing their kids there and they're all hanging out. You know, I just love the vibes of Hawaii. It's slower. I love being at the beach. My daughter and wife love being at the beach. So I'm gonna recant my first answer and go back to the North Shore of Oahu.
Okay.
Fair enough. Will, and mark my words, I'll play this back one day. I will own a house on the North Shore of Oahu one day.
Okay. Is that on the vision board?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't want to live there full time, but I want to go spend the winters there with my family.
Okay. I like that. Hey, if it's on the vision board, it's possible. What, for you, in your life and everything, traveling, working, whatever it may be, how have you kept your faith intact?
It's a great question, and I think it's hard for I've seen how hard it is for people around me, right? I think it goes back to, like, the reason I went on a mission wasn't the reason that most, I think, people go. Like, I had, like, totally left the church. I was, you know, big into all the crazy stuff and did some stuff that, you know, there was a point in my life where, like, I'm glad I made it out alive, yeah. Right? And the reason I came back was because I was feeling this void in my life. And I started to look at the people around me, and I realized if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to die, right? And I started to look at who are the people, like, that are happy. And I noticed, you know, at the time, it was a lot of people that had religion in their life. Yeah. And so the search for me wasn't, like, a family or culturally driven thing. It was, like, I was looking for something for me. And I'll try not to get emotional, but I still remember I had a lot of pain, right? A lot of pain that just... I tried everything in the world to forget it and, you know, get it out of my life. And I'll never forget when I really learned about Jesus Christ and about the power of forgiveness. And I'll never forget the day when I felt some of the pains of the world that I couldn't get rid of just be gone. And that, for me, is why I'm in, you know, the gospel, is because I will never be able to deny that feeling. And that's, I served a mission because of that feeling, because I said, I know there's people out there that are feeling this way, and I need to find them. Yeah. And so I think religion is a very culturally driven thing, and that's why it's so easy for people to leave. Where for me, what it's allowed me to, again, keep it in my life is, I think I'm in it for me, right? I'm in it because I've experienced something for me that I can't deny, something that has changed my life. It's filled that void. It's made me happy. It's, again, relieved pains that I couldn't get rid of any other way. And so, you know, I think a lot of people leave, specifically like the LDS church, for valid reasons, right? They have people offend them, people, you know, do things, there's teachings they don't understand, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here because I've felt something from, like, the power of Jesus Christ. And that's why, you know, so again, I don't go to church to be social.
Yeah.
People are going to be people. They're going to say things that offend me, but that's not why I'm there.
I agree with you. I think that was one of the biggest things during the pandemic that I loved, is virtual church, because now the social aspect was gone and you were there to get the content, the lessons. You're able to have the sacrament in your home. For me, it was just such a different way about going to church. And I'm sure you experienced the whole singles wards life and that whole game. And I'm just like, why do we go to church each week? What is the real reason? Is it to just be social with people, or is it to remember our Savior and the sacrifice for us and to be nourished with more teachings? Thank you for sharing that.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for being willing to get vulnerable and emotion, I think. I can tell that you've been around people like Jimmy and other mentors, because our society teaches men not to show emotion. And it's a sign of weakness, when in reality it's healthy. It's what we need. It's who we are. So thank you.
Anytime.
What, I'm curious, if, let's say this was your last day here on the earth, what is the one thing that you would want people to remember you for?
Being a great dad and a great husband. I think that we wear a lot of titles, right? But the most important title in the world to me is being dad and being a husband. So I hope I accomplish a lot of really, really great and amazing things. And I hope I'm a part of a lot of really amazing and great things, but that's not the most important thing to me. It's being the best dad in the world to my daughter, Berkeley, right? It's being the best husband in the world to my wife, Bailey. So like, again, if I was going to die today, and I hope that people would talk about those things more than anything else.
Love that. I'm curious, how did you and your wife meet?
Through sales, sort of. Okay. It was a welcome back barbecue at the end of the summer. I had just gotten my first boat, this like kind of old beater boat. I was taking all my married friends boating, and she lived in Washington at the time and was just in town for the weekend and came to this welcome back barbecue. Hey, it's going to be a bunch of single guys that do sales and whatnot. And anyway, talked her into come boating with me and fell in love.
I love that. Just like that.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your guys' plan? You guys want to have one kid, 10 kids? Are you going the whole Utah?
Yeah, so we're not doing the whole Utah thing. I want four, she wants three. Okay. We had our first daughter, easy, right? First try. And then we've been, actually, it's taken us 2 full years. We're still trying to get pregnant. And we're going through the whole IVF process, which okay. for anyone going through that, like, I'm with you. I know how hard it is. Yeah. It's tough. But we'd like to have three. Right? Okay. We'll see what the Lord blesses us with, but that's kind of the plan there. And I think, you know, we're still working on the dream, but I'd love to have 5 acres somewhere. I'd love to have a, you know, a house that my kids never, they want to be around us, right, as they get older. And we have an amazing little compound where we just create memories and, you know, go to Lake Powell a couple times a year. So
that's the way to do it. I'm curious, for those listening and watching this, what is the best way for people to connect with you?
I think the best way to connect with me is through Instagram right now. Like I said, my Instagram handle is @_Swandy, Swandy. Shoot me a DM, and you know, I love connecting with people. We don't have to necessarily work together. You know, I'm way more than just a pest control salesman, but that being said, if you are interested in what I do and work, hit me up there too. But I love connecting with people, and that's one of the things I'm most passionate about, is just people. So that's probably the easiest way to find me.
Okay, perfect. I would love to wrap this up with, if you could give one message to the world today, and it could be, you know, we're in the holiday season, we're going into a new year, or we just got through a brutal political season, what's your one message you would give?
I'll have to think for a second about that. I think a message that I have is about, like, self-love, as weird as that sounds, right? I think that the world, social media, you know, everything around us is sort of built to, like, tear us down and built to compare ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've found a lot of value, and I feel like I have become so much better by learning to, like, love myself, right? Learning to be kind to myself, learning to be compassionate to myself. And so I think the message is just keep trying. No matter where you're at, no matter what you're doing, like, you know, times get better. You know, things change, and, you know, seasons happen. And so, you know, I think that choose happiness, you know, choose to again, love yourself, forgive yourself, and move on. And I think a lot of people are scared for the future. And I think that that's a choice.
Yeah.
And I think we should be, as a society, extremely excited for 2025. I think it's a year where we can, just so much good can happen, but good doesn't happen necessarily just by chance. Like, you have to decide, hey, I'm going to have an amazing year. I'm going to decide to level up. I'm going to decide to love myself more, to forgive myself. And I think that if everyone did that, I think the world would change. Yeah. Right. And then the last thing I'd say, just as like a kind of two part thing, is also with the Christmas season, is there is, if you are looking for a way to feel better about yourself, go serve someone else. It is this gift that keeps on giving. When you help and serve and think about other people, you grow so much individually. And that's where the most happiness in life, I think, is when you're serving other people. So a lot of people listening to this, I'm sure there's people that are sad or, you know, frustrated, like, go serve someone and watch what it'll do for your life.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me and for sharing your story and your message and just your insights.
Appreciate it.
Taking the time.
Appreciate it a ton.